Yes, sir. He's here.
What up? What up?
We finally got Mari back on the dad pod.
I'm back, man.
Maze, you may not know this, but I actually texted Mari. I was like, yo, is there some weird stuff going on? Because when Tom's on, you're not on. When you're on.
Yeah, yo, he
texted me. Are you mad at him? And I don't know it.
Yeah, he texted me. He was like, "Yo, you mad at Tom?" I was like, "What? Like, what you talking about?" But no, but it was weird though, because like every single time that I can make it, but mostly it's because like I'm available in the evenings. Like when I am available, it's the evenings. Even like the weekdays, like if I'm off work, I'm only available like after. Like 4:30, 5 o'clock type shit. You know what I'm saying? And Tom is available early in the day. So it's like, today it worked. Today it worked out.
Well, what I don't think you realize is Tom at night has to really focus on getting his waves right. And the headphones,
yeah, I figured.
See the way they work.
No, it makes sense. Make a lot of sense, man.
I saw you giving a TED talk on the waves.
Yeah, I had to, man. Well, what it was that a lot of people was asking me for a long time. Like when I post the videos of my shit or like the pictures of my shit, they'll hit me and be like, "Yo, what are you using or what are you doing or whatever?" So I was like, "All right, bet." I meant to do this shit like a month ago. Like just going live and all that. I'm gonna try to do it more often, like more frequently. That and sports betting is the questions I get the most. Like,
are you big into sports betting? I didn't realize that.
I'm getting a little more into it because, like, at the beginning of this year, I was like a complete, like, didn't know what the plus and minus shit meant at all. But like a lot of my friends do it. You know what I'm saying? I've won some decent, you know, a decent amount of money on the shit, but I didn't know what it was. So when I found out how easy it was to get into it, I was like, oh shit. Like, I'm sure it's more people than me who felt like this shit is like a different language. You know what I'm saying? So I just did that.
See, my roommates in college were, I don't know the appropriate term, but let's just say they worked for the bookie. But their main job was making sure that other people paid their money.
Oh, yeah. They was just in. Yeah. See, I know people that's up top that go to like they go to a bookie who they know. But I just bet online. Like I do the it's Bovada. It's a site called Bovada. And I would do FanDuel.
Well, I'm 38. We're talking 20 years ago. There was no online sports.
Yeah, no, for sure. But like they go in person and do it. You know what I'm saying? I don't do that right now. I have to pick the game. Like the betting that they do, they have to pick every single game. They don't get a choice. Like, oh, I only want these four or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What's up, man? Sorry, there's a Hamilton song stuck in my head all day. Yeah, you know what's funny is my favorite song in that movie is that, or the play, whatever you want to call it, the musical, is the one that's sang by a white dude. I mean, how racist is that?
I just was shocked when I found out that was the dude from now I'm blanking on the name of the show, the David Fincher show on Netflix about catching serial killers. How's it called?
Oh, Mindhunter.
I couldn't.
Yeah, is it?
Believe it was the same dude.
Yeah, I never watched that show. I just know that song is catchy as all hell.
Yeah, it's a good show.
So, listen, first of all, Tom, I was just telling Maze that last week I had to text Mari because I was like, yo, how come every time Tom's on, you magically can't make it? Are you mad at him and we got to have a sit down or something?
Yeah, Mario, let's talk it out, man.
Yeah, let's talk about it, man. Let's talk about it.
I'm sorry, I haven't been watching the Giants as much, and I feel like you're holding a grudge.
You know what? I shouldn't have been watching them as much. So we in the same book. That's the thing.
I think it was you, Mari, who tweeted out today, like taking Danny Dimes might have been a waste of a pick.
And no, I didn't. Like,
might have?
Never. I would never say that.
There's a lot of Twitter of people like magically waking up to like he's not that good, and it's like I don't know I've ever seen ESPN and Fox unanimously consider a pick just an absolute horrible pick other than like Anthony Bennett, and it was Danny Dimes.
Bro, listen, Jamarcus Russell got picked in the NFL. Don't let's not do this. We're not going to do this to Danny Dimes, man. Because here's the thing, right? And I don't want to sound like a Danny Dimes apologist because he hasn't done enough for me to like justify going to bat for him. I do like him. I really do. But this team has a lot more problems than just it's not him. You know what I'm saying? Like the defense is like bad. It's been bad for like years. Last time we had a good defense, we won the Super Bowl. And after that, the defense has been in the toilet. So it's not even that. It's just like how is this a bad pick and Dwayne Haskins wasn't? It's because he got picked first. That's really what it is. Like, that's all it is. It's just about virtue of where he got picked. So it's not him. He hasn't done anything that a lot of other, like last year he missed 2-3 games because of injuries and he was like 3 touchdowns away from breaking a rookie record, but he fumbled a lot and we lost. So it's like, they don't really talk about that, but you know, but it's not him. I'm not going to blame him. Like, oh shit. You know, if we had somebody else, we would have won. Nah, like there's nothing that a quarterback could do for this team right now because we got too many. Saquon tore his ACL today, so I mean, you know, he could be John Elway. We wouldn't be doing nothing. Like it's not really him. I can't really blame him. Watching that defense, boy, oh my God.
Well, I can tell you today, Duke, Prim, and Bella sat down on the couch for like 20 minutes. And for those who don't know, Bella's our pit bull. Mm-hmm. And legit, he watched football. He like sat on the couch and then he went down for his nap, came out of his nap and just went football, football. Mm-hmm. It almost made me cry.
Yeah.
It like it was great.
Me too. Shit. Watching this
day. And then Madeline's starting to get into the Panthers because, like, all the kids in our neighborhood dress up in Cam Newton jerseys and Luke Kuechly jerseys on Sundays, Julius Peppers. And so we've kind of made it a thing. So we got her a little Panthers dress that she wears. And she doesn't know what's going on the screen, but she just screams, "Go Panthers!" every 10 seconds. So she's into it.
That's good, man.
Yeah, and it buys us a little bit of time. I mean, she only is into it for like a few minutes and then she wants to go do something else. But we brought out the laptop in the front yard and watched a little bit of football and just kind of enjoyed the weather. It was like beautiful out here. I don't know about you guys, but it was beautiful here in Charlotte today.
Yeah, it was good today. It's good over here. So it was like 60 degrees, which is like my favorite type of weather where it's like windbreaker, not necessarily hoodie weather, but you know, windbreaker. I like it. I'm enjoying it.
Is it 60 degrees and 1998? Because I haven't rocked a windbreaker in a minute.
Bro, windbreakers is fire, man. I would never not rock a good windbreaker.
You spend time with your family?
Sure I do.
Good. Because a man who doesn't spend time with his family can never be a real man.
I know this is the right thing to do, Dad, because I would die for this kid just so he wouldn't have to feel 1 ounce of sadness.
That's why you're here right now, to protect me, to be scared for me,
to be a good father. And that's exactly what I'm gonna be.
Hello, Dad? Yeah, I just wanted to say I love you.
Hi, Mom. Could you put down the phone for a sec?
Es flunt kein to Papa.
Hey, Dad? You want to have a catch?
I'd like that.
Well, fast forward into the future. Welcome to everybody to another episode of the Dad Pod. You got the full crew this week. Very happy to have Mari. What up, Mar?
What's up?
We got Tom.
Yep.
And we have the father to children unknown, Maze. What's up, buddy?
Yo.
We got a great conversation we want to have here, and I feel like we kind of have a resident expert because, as he reminded us, in 2018 he wrote a 4,000 word article on this subject matter, which, by the way, I think only Tom Haberstroh, Bill Simmons, and Wright Thompson get the green light for 4,000 plus words these days.
I wish I was paid like them. Yeah.
It's coming, Tom. It's coming. Yeah. I believe it. But the subject is this. There's a movie that's super popular right now on Netflix called The Social Dilemma. And it's all about how social media companies are set up to sell people's attention. Mm-hmm. And the systems behind how they do that are actually building behavioral and psychographic change in us. That's like, that is their goal, to change our behaviors and our mindsets, to get us sucked into content, into wormholes, into black holes, as they say, to try to get us to stay online. Now, for me, being as the business I'm in is serving ads through these platforms, none of this was surprising to me. Yeah. Like, none of this was surprising to me. It's been disturbing to me for some time, but I thought most people kind of knew this. And it's surprising to see even people, especially the younger people who are watching this, going, we need to talk about this. Like, blah, blah, blah. I was like, I don't understand how nobody knew. So I realize that I don't think Tom and Mari have seen the documentary yet. I highly suggest everybody sit down and watch The Social Dilemma on Netflix. Mm-hmm. But let's start maybe with Tom, because you wrote about it. What your take on how social media is impacting people, and what you think as a parent your responsibility is in kind of managing that?
Well, I haven't watched the documentary, but I've interviewed a couple of the people who are featured in it because I've seen the trailer and the buzz about it. And it's been something that had been gnawing at me for a while, and covering the NBA, because there was a distinct change in 2010 when I walked into the Miami Heat locker room to like 2016. In 6 years, there is a complete behavioral change in the locker room. When you go into a locker room, it used to be just guys sitting around getting treatment, maybe reading a magazine or listening to music by themselves, but never with their phones out. And then flash forward to 6 years later, everyone, not a single person in the locker room, is doing something other than playing on their phones. So it went from nobody to everybody in 6 years. And so I was like, is this a problem? Do coaches worry about this? And it turns out they do. Is like, team dinners used to be a lot more communication, a lot more talking, a lot more interacting, bonding. And now they do what's called phone bags, where they put the bags the phones in the bag before they go and sit down at dinner. Mm. And that way that they can like artificially create people's focus on just getting to know the teammates, getting to know the coaches.
Smart.
So it's the guy I interviewed most in the story was JJ Redick, and he had banned himself. He had deleted all of his social media apps because he realized how influential it was. And the word that you'll hear a lot, and I'm sure they talk about it on the movie or the documentary, is called persuasive technology. Mm-hmm. And persuasive technology essentially persuading you to stay in an app longer, or persuading you to click a certain box, or hook you into caring about a notification. And NBA players are super addicted to this because they're competitive by nature. They are wired to win at everything. And so if mm-hmm. they can go into an Instagram post, put up a photo and find out that Kyle Kuzma got more likes on his postgame photo than my photo, man, it hits the same dopamine. So, the NBA is the most social media friendly sport. It also means that it's the most social media obsessed of the sports. Mm-hmm. And that you can see that in the follower counts. You can see that in the activity. You can see that in like how much stuff leaks to social media. But I think the larger question is, is it too late? Like, do coaches meet them online, meet them halfway, or do they say, yo, put your phones away? And it's a question that locker rooms are dealing with and also the kitchen table is dealing with.
So Maury, before I turn it over to you, I want to touch on just like two quick things for people to kind of understand. The fear of persuasive technology is that Tom laid out the three things that are components of it, but they all fall into the same goal, right? The goal is to keep you on whatever app or program as long as possible, because the longer you're on, the more that they can sell an ad to you. And on Facebook, an ad needs to be viewable to the person for only 3 seconds for it to count, right? So in theory, for every 5 minutes you're on the app, they can sell you 10 to 15 ads that just 3 seconds of your time, right? Now, the key is the way they keep you on the app is they built algorithms which pay attention to the things that you have liked to engage with in the past and what people similar to you have liked or engaged with currently, and they process serving that to you as a way of keeping you on it. And based on what you do in real time, these computers, these AI bots, are programmed to recognize, well, he didn't engage with this, so we're going to serve him something else that we might think he likes. But the problem is the way they do that is they are serving you things which increasingly are capable of persuading your belief systems, right? Because what do? We click on something. Let's take the harmless version. We click on something about fashion. It's Kyle Kuzma. He likes to dress a certain way. Okay, so now we're going to serve him another piece of content about fashion, this one from Jerry Lorenzo. Cool. Now we're going to serve him another piece of content. But this is about how fashion stems from only the most cultured people. And then the next thing you know, they fast forward and you're down this whole Wikipedia hole of where it's fashion comes from the wealthy Parisians, blah, 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 right? And it's really easy for that to happen, but it can happen much more dangerously in the forms of political and social commentary. And so I say all this to summarize, there's two things that we talk about being fearful. I'm sure the coaches care about the players' overall well-being, but I would guess that the coaches are more concerned in the moment about, are they able to build their team chemistry the way they need to and achieve their team goals, blah, blah, blah. As parents, I think the fear is how easily it is to radicalize your children, to break down their egos, to build senses of insecurity because of the way this content is being served mm-hmm. and then responded to by public people and then cycled back through to build your belief systems into what you think you're making free will, but it is by no means free will. It is mm-hmm. 100% computer programmed.
Yeah, it's so the idea about the bag, you know, the bag for the phone. I remember a long time ago, Justin Tinsley talked about that at a Dave Chappelle party or something like that, where he had, you know, everybody that attended, they had to, you know, put their phones in the bag when they came in, they would get it when they leave.
I remember that.
And basically everyone who attended that party, right? Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was that, and then like they had like a little after, some like a little event after that. It was something like that. So where it was like, Chris Webber was there, and there's a bunch of notable people at the party or whatever, you know. But the point was that it reminded them of like an old school way of partying and socializing with people, because it was like, it's not about your status on social media, or it's not about the clip you can get. It's like you have to really interact with the people that are in front of you, because that's the only option you have, because you don't have your phone right there. You know what I mean? You can't just look down and be, you know, you're present at this party, but at the same time, you just left everybody in the room as soon as you look at your phone, because, you know, you can't really build camaraderie like that. So I understand, you know, it may sound crazy to some people who think that this is just something they should be able to do. That's fine. But if we're teammates and we're at like a dinner or just a get together, if we're in the moment right here in this room, we shouldn't be talking to people who are not in the room. You know what I mean? Like not 90% of the time. Like, we shouldn't just come dap each other up, have somebody take a picture of us, and then that's it. Because that's not really, that's how you look like a team. You know what I mean? You can look like a team to everybody else image wise, but we can't really build friendship and get inside jokes and really know, get to know each other and stuff like that, unless we really talking. You know, like, we all married here.
Right.
So it's like, imagine you sit down movie night with the fam, you on your phone. You know what I mean? You watching a movie with your wife and you on your phone, she on her phone. You guys aren't really getting a full experience of what's going on. Like, it's not the same. So I understand why coaches would feel that way. You know what I mean? Because even me, like, I feel like regular, just if you're not an NBA, if not an athlete, entertainer, whatever, you need to unplug from it for a while. Like, I took a social media break a couple months ago where I was just off everything for like a month and a half. You know, I gave myself a month, and then when the month was up, I didn't feel the urge to jump back into it. So I just waited a little while longer until I really felt like, you know, let me see what's going on. You just kind of need to unplug from a while, because it's like, you know, you start to lose track of like, how do you really feel about things? You know, you log on so much and you see other people's opinions on stuff and their thoughts on stuff so much that you might agree with this, agree with that. But how do you really feel? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's necessary. Like, it really is.
I just lost the last 5 seconds of that. But Maury, tell me, with an old you, because your oldest is much older than mm-hmm. Tom and mine.
Yeah.
How does this impact you as a dad, thinking about how old are they allowed to be on social media or on the mm-hmm. phone in general, or YouTube, et cetera? And like, how do you think about this? Like what goes through your head?
Oh, I'm definitely, you know, my antennas is up, you know, for sure. Like, she's 11, so she's very much aware of, like, you know, the like music that's coming out and the popular TikTok video, and that's her thing, is TikTok. You know what I mean? Like, she watches a lot of anime, and like, TikTok is her thing. TikTok, YouTube, mainly TikTok. So with that, it's just like, I understand that TikTok is even more of a, like, it's like an ad on steroids. You know what I mean? It's a very short clip, but they get right to the point of what they want every single time. Like, it's really amazing to me. Honestly, like, me being much older, it's amazing to me, because I'm looking at it like, damn, like, you took this little 20-second clip and did all of that, and like, wow, this is amazing. But at the same time, it's dangerous, because it depends on what type of content you're consuming. So we're definitely aware of like what she's into, and we kind of monitor. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't want to necessarily keep her sheltered from the real world, like what's going on out there. But we also don't want to make, you know, we want to make sure that she's not being influenced by certain things too. So it's about knowing your kid. You know how your kid is. You know your kid is likely to be influenced by certain things, or they're into this, kind of knowing who their friends are. Just, you know, it really just comes, you know, at home. Because I know when I was younger, I was listening to music that my parents probably wouldn't have necessarily wanted me to listen to, but they knew who I was. So it's like, okay, you listening to this, all right, cool. Now, if you start to display certain behavior, we might have to start thinking, you know, about this a different way. But at a certain point, you know, my daughter, she knows this is entertainment. She knows that this stuff is, you know, is there for this. She consumes it on this type of level, and that's where she leaves it. She doesn't try to emulate it. She's not out here, you know what I mean? Like, she's not a bad kid, you know what I mean?
So what I would say is, first of all, no, I don't think any of this, I just want to clarify, by is about being a bad or a good kid. But what I will say is when you watch the documentary, and you should, and like I said, I'm involved in this to a certain extent every day with my job, leveraging these subtle psychological changes and the data that it informs them. But the reality is people don't notice the changes because we all think that we're not susceptible to it. Some of the people in this documentary, and I'm sure some of the people who Tom has interviewed, and by the way, some of the people that I've actually been involved in conducting studies on, we are talking about highly, highly educated adults who are like, no, nothing's changed my point of view. Nothing's done this, nothing's done that. And they're just wrong. So like, then they see the data on how their opinions change, how their quick behavior change, how their interests were changed from the time they encountered a single piece of content on social media. And that's a secondary thing. So that's like the fear of radicalization or stuff like that. Or not even radicalization, but let's just say inauthentic opinion forming. But the second side of it, which is also really difficult, is the idea that at some point you have to let your kids have their own channels at whatever age is the right age. And by the way, I have no damn clue what the right age is. No opinion, no clue. But then all of a sudden they get stuck into this cycle of commenting and public feedback, which they have traced direct links to teen suicide increases of 300%, or it was like 280% since 2010. That is how much the increase in teen suicide is. And 2010 was the rise of like multi-platform social media.
Yeah.
And it's just wild.
You know, also, Ben, like, not to cut you off, the thing about social media that I'll say, the one thing that I don't like is that it's taken away, it's dehumanizing a lot of things, like the way you choose your words, how you choose to, you know what I mean, how you feel about making people feel bad. Like, you know, I remember when I was a kid, just like, if you say something to somebody, you have to see their reaction right away. And you got to make a decision on how that made you feel, like, right now. How does this make you feel? How does this kid crying or getting angry make you feel? They don't have that today because there's an Avi up there and it's like, oh shit, you can say what you want and you don't have to deal with the consequences, you know?
Mari, not even that. Like, you're not even conscious of the nonverbal communication when you talk to people. Like, you're not even conscious, but your brain is picking up like nonverbal cues about, you know, the way their eye moves or their mouth moves or like their eye gaze or their attention or the way that they're feeling, that you don't even know, but so much information that you're gathering about what thing to say or how to communicate or to respond that you're just not really getting. And how many times have you been in a text message or in a group chat where you type something out and they all get mad at you or they take it the wrong way. And you're like, no.
Yeah, and they be like, wait, you mad? It's like, wait, mad? Like, bro, I'm smiling when I said I didn't. Yeah. So, but it's like, and another part of that too is just like, you know, you can say what you want or whatever. And then the people get to dictate whether you was right or wrong. Because let's say you say something that was just dead wrong and you felt bad about it initially. If you get 10,000 retweets on it with people agreeing with you, you might change your own mind. And be like, oh, wait a minute, maybe what I said was, oh, okay, cool, a lot of people like it. Or if you think something in your heart and you believe it and a lot of people disagree with you, like if the, you know, shoe's on the other foot, I just hate that the numbers get to dictate the feelings. You know what I mean? That's the one thing about social media that I don't like.
Well, that's it, man. That's how they've gamed the system. Tristan Harris, who's the, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, and if Maze, you've watched it too. I think Tristan Harris is like the face of this documentary, or he's like one of the driving forces behind it. And Tristan used to work at one of the big tech companies. If I remember correctly, it was Google or Facebook. And Google. Google. He was like directly involved in persuading people to stay in the apps, changing their behaviors without them really knowing it. And that's some like dark shit, you know, when you're doing that stuff is like you're changing people's brains and how they're wired, what they respond to and what they don't. And what they realized is that people fucking love slot machines.
Mm-hmm.
They love the idea of like, if I just pull one more time on this Twitter feed, maybe something in here will just make my day. And they realized if they can create a slot machine every time you log into your app, you are going to stay into that and pull that lever 100 million more times. So what they do is like they put, you know, things that are going viral, and you can see the scoreboard. It's got 115 retweets and 257 likes, and they'll put that at the top of your feed because then you're just like, ooh, ooh, this is good. This is gold. Like this is delicious to my brain. And so they figured out that if they reverse engineer your Twitter feed or your Facebook feed to have the juiciest, most enraging material, you will stay in there. And so like when you see the scoreboard of like, oh, my tweet only got like 5 retweets and I feel bad about that, I'm going to have to figure out what works. And so you start to think like, right, okay, what are some things that tweet that go viral? Maybe I'll do it like that. And what that is, it's changing your communication. It's changing the way you talk. It's changing the way you tweet. It's changing the way you behave. And so they are incentivizing you with these slot machine returns to stay in the app and to like – you feel a certain way when you get a lot of retweets. You feel a certain way when you don't.
Yeah.
You feel
well, a perfect example is Amin and Ethan, I believe, came up with that internet patois – you know, shtick.
Yes.
And it used to be cardinal sin for everybody to use the same joke. You know what I mean? And now, because you know it works as a structure, it allows A, unfunny people to attempt to be funny. But right. B, more importantly, what it really is doing is it's giving everyone a coded way of a chance at winning that slot machine. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, I just have to stick with this. Me, nobody. Me, everybody. Yeah. You know? Like, I just have to stick right. within that framework.
Me,
and 1 out of 5,
nobody,
1 out of 10.
Bruce Arians.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. One of them's going to hit. But I think as parents, the scary thing is when you start seeing the impact on kids. The rise in depression, the rise in anxiety, the rise in suicide, right? Like when I was a kid, my dad killed himself when I was 7 and nobody knew really what suicide was. Nobody knew how to talk about it. It was weird because it was different. When kids died, when I was a junior in high school, 2 kids died from drug overdoses. And that was the closest thing we had to suicide other than my father's death. And I'm talking in a town of like 100,000 people in North Jersey. Like it wasn't normal. Now there's a kid in every town being diagnosed with depression. And it's actually more prevalent in higher income areas, believe it or not. That was something Prim pulled out from her PhD class. Mm-hmm. But it's wild to think that everyone knows about suicide now. And no, it's not because of suicide awareness. It is because it is that much more prevalent, making the need for suicide awareness. Right?
Right.
Like,
right.
And that's what – it scares me as a kid because I don't know what the right answers are. I have no idea how I'm supposed to – let my know how old my kid is before I can let him have you know, social media, or how much I should be watching him versus trusting him, you know, like I don't know.
Right. Yeah, so the things that always get me. No, go ahead, Tom. I was just gonna say the things that always get me is like the stories I read about, you know, the kids that's like, you know, like these, you know, the family tell these stories about these kids, how they just this upbeat kid and stuff like that. And they end up committing suicide at like 9 or 10 years old because of online, you know, bullying or like just, you know, something like that. That scares me. I won't even lie. Like that scares me because knowing, you know, you look at your kids and you like, you look at the things that make them feel away, make them cry, make them angry, make them happy. And it's like, man, I hope this doesn't translate to somebody outside of this being able to affect your feelings on a certain level. You know what I'm saying? And that's not to say anything about the kids who succumb to that or felt some type of way. Like, they're children at the end of the day. You can't help that. But that scares me because it's like, I want to know, like, what are the signs? Like, how do you even prevent that? You know what I mean? How do you even begin to prevent that, you know?
Yeah, so, Mari, I feel like I heard you talk about Black Mirror at some point, right?
Uh-huh.
Have you watched the show?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Ben, have you watched it? Maze, I think you definitely have Maze, right?
I've probably watched, yeah, like 12 out of the 25 episodes or something like that. I probably watched about half of them. I think the show is, especially considering how early it was done, it's so accurate. You know what I mean?
Right. So, like The Social Dilemma, I have not watched Black Mirror, but I feel like I know a lot of the concepts already, and I'm curious to hear Maze. When we talk about when is the right time to have our kids on devices or the internet or social media or whatever, I just get super bummed out because I realize their technology that they're going to be growing up with is going to be so far beyond what we can comprehend right now, that like fighting that battle is going to become basically a technology thing, not a parenting thing. It's going to be so much more complicated than what our parents dealt with when we all got like AOL screen names. So in those shows, or Maze, I'm curious your thoughts on just like where social media and technology is going. Like, my daughter's 3 years old. When she's 13, what do you think that's going to look like?
Well, I think the most, like, do you guys remember when you were growing up and you had the kids that you went to school with that like didn't have TV or like didn't have video games and like weren't allowed to have it at their house? Like, was that a thing for you guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
That I think is like really the wrong approach, like just to try to deprive them and like keep it away from them. I think you need to teach your kids how to use it effectively. Like, that's pretty much what my dad does all the time for his job at the middle school, is like teach them how to use search engines correctly and like how to source things and how to double check information and stuff. So I think that's the important thing, is like, you're not going to be able to keep it away from your kids. Like, you can't have the Black Mirror episode where you censor everything. You can't do that. Like, that's not,
you see how that turned out.
That did not work out, because then, you know, she gets to middle school and some kid's showing her hacked videos of murders.
And that's part of my point about not sheltering my children from certain things, because it's like, if I'm going to prepare you for the real world, I probably should show you, you know, or not necessarily put blinders on to like what's out there, but also I'm going to show you how to navigate through this. So what you're saying, it makes perfect sense. Like, I'm not going to tell you don't use it. I'm going to say don't use it this way. Use it this way, because you're going to use it. I know you are. So just do this. That's really it.
You know what's wild, though? The people I knew growing up who didn't have TV or wasn't allowed to watch it, there were two types of kids, and to me they went in exact opposite directions. There were types of kids who weren't allowed to have TV, but were not given anything else, so they were not given attention or direction to do other things. And those kids, for the most part, I can think of two off the top of my head, have done like nothing in life post high school. Like, barely did college, have a whatever job. And by the way, I'm talking about people who came from good families, right? Like, I'm not talking about like they didn't have opportunity. And I'm talking like they had every bit of opportunity. Then I had other kids who didn't really have TV, but their parents are like huge readers and big into, you know, conversation or fitness and sports and whatever. And every one of those kids are fine. And honestly, I can think of like five or six different times in my life, like, I dated the girl who's like, oh no, like, I don't really watch TV. Like, we never did that. Like, I read and this and that. And I'm not saying they're better off, but I did kind of envy what felt like to me, because I was a kid who was kind of like, I didn't have a dad. My mom didn't really pay attention to me a lot. So like, I was like, grew up with the TV. Like, that was, I was a babysitter to a certain extent, right? And so I kind of envied the freedom of disconnectivity from the TV. And it took me till I was probably like 25 to really start like letting go and being like, oh, this thing is really kind of stupid. Like, I like it for sports, occasionally for the news, but like for the most part, I don't need to watch 2 hours of TV every day. But I say all this to come back to, I think, Mari, the important thing about what you're talking about and Maze, what I think you are getting at, is less about whether you keep them from it or you let them have it. I think the important thing is that I'm taking from you guys is that you really, really educate your kids on what it's doing and then giving them other passions, interests, and things that are of meaning for their attention outside of it, and show them that their value is tied up in these other things, not in this device, which is literally gamed against you to keep your attention.
Going back to Tom's original question to me, which is what is social media in the future? It's obviously VR, Tom. Duh. We've been saying that VR is the future for 40 years. So let's just keep it going.
Well, isn't this what Westworld kind of gets into a little bit?
Pretty much, yeah. That's the future. Interacting with Sims that are designed to react to you, and there's no other people involved.
Yeah.
We already are doing that, by the way. We're literally already doing that with these AI chatbots who are customer service reps. like it's unbelievable. We just built one for Dell and one for MediaCom. How much they can engage with you before you're like, oh wait, this time it isn't a person. Alex is a fucking robot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That shit is tough, man. It's like it's one of those things where like it's easy to get caught up, even like as an adult with like sense. It's easy to read something where it's like, this motherfucker, it took me a long time to just be like, you know what? Every single time I reply to somebody like that, I always hate myself for doing it after. So let me just stop doing it, because it's not going to make me feel any better, like at all. So, you know, there's still like little small hurdles that like just adults even have to get over on social media, no matter what it is. So, you know, just having to extend that message to your kids is like, you know, it's just that more that much more important, because it's like the era that they're in right now. Also being kids already don't really care. Like, you hear the jokes kids tell to other kids and the stuff they say about each other. Like, you remember when you was a kid, what they say about you or what they say to you? Like, bro, kids is ruthless. So online, you know, added to that, to where you don't even, like I said earlier, you don't have to see their reaction in person. Like, it's crazy. It's like 100 times crazier, man. It's just, we both learning, you know what I'm saying? The kid, the parent, you both learning as you go, you know?
Yeah, man. It's like, what I worry about is that we're not going to be able to tell when someone's online or when they're with you.
Right.
So like right now we have phones out and we have these AirPods to like signal that whoever I'm interacting with is with me, you know? Like, if you got your AirPods, and I think Ben, you talked about this with Duke, is just like, you don't realize what signal you're giving to your kids when you're on your phone or you got your headphones in or whatever it is. But like, what happens when technology gets so good that it's just like a lens that you wear, like a contact lens that you wear. And when you're down, when you're having these like normal, what you think are normal interactions in person or interactions, and then you realize, oh, they're not with me. They're on fucking Facebook right now. That's the stuff that scares me, is like, if I have my kid, you know, talking to me, and in 10 years, there's going to be technology where it's just a chip in her head or a chip in her arm.
So that's the green. That's the entire history of you, which was like my favorite Black Mirror episode. And I like the potential of like having a computer in your eye for like the artistic capabilities. But in terms of like the 1984 Big Brother conspiracy thing, right, terrible. Right.
Yeah,
so bad. So I Mari, my kid's not old enough yet to, you know, play around on the iPad or anything. She watches Sesame Street and Puppy Dog Pals. And then when she like grabs my phone on the off chance that like I don't have it in my pocket, mm-hmm. she like plays around with it intuitively. And that's the other scary part, is that like she's 3 years old and yet she can pretty much navigate an iPhone or an iPad.
Listen, I'm gonna tell you this.
And get it so quick.
Listen, I'm gonna tell y'all both this, right? So my baby girl just turned 6 years old yesterday. She's been using—
Happy birthday.
Appreciate that. She's been using, you know, our phone, tablet, whatever, like just kind of like you said, in that kind of way, passively, just kind of like messing around on it. She got it so quick, it was crazy. And I thought that was like the fastest shit ever. My son, right? He's not even 2 years old yet, right? If I'm watching a video on my phone, or if I'm showing him something on my phone, if I get a notification from one of my group chats, you know what he does? He puts his thumb up there and flicks the notification away. Like he already knows to do, like he knows how to skip the ads on a YouTube video. Like if he's about to watch a video and he sees it pop up, he knows right where to click.
You gotta teach him the Dikembe finger, man.
Bro, listen. This kid, like, it's second nature.
Duke picked up the swiping on videos within 2 minutes. He just got it. It was absolutely wild. But the thing is, and I think that the most important part of all of this is, at least I would guess until they're 13 or 14, is being as much of an active participant in their development. So their attachment to these things, and it's like, how do you not let it be a pacifier device, but rather something you do with them? At least that's what I feel like. I don't know, like, because I feel like when they're young, that's like the only way to know what they're picking up and what they're not. Because the wild thing about all these programs, and they cover this in the documentary, and I know this because of how we have to build like brand safety protocols, it is really, really hard to legislate what they can or can't see and how appropriate it is. So I feel like, listen, it's impossible to keep your kids off phones and computers because they're necessary, right? And also some of this stuff is like really good. Duke like learned to count from Mickey Mouse Club, you know? He just picked it up so quickly. But at the same standpoint, it's like, I think something that Prim has done really well with him is like, all right, like if you want to watch something, if you want to do something on the phone, like we are doing it together. It is not something that we just like hand you and then walk away. But I don't know, like this is, I don't think there's an answer. I just think that that's like my hypothesis for how we are going to try.
Yeah. It's, you know, my parents actually, I think I've mentioned it, they didn't let me watch rated R movies in the house. And so as soon as I left the house when I was like in middle school and went to a buddy's house, I would like ask, yo, what rated R movie can we watch? And that always influences me in parenting, is just knowing that like the more that you censor or the more that you keep things away, it actually makes them want it more. And that's not just parenting. That's probably on a human level too.
Yep.
Is if I tell you, don't think pink elephant, you're going to think pink elephant.
The first thing I'm going to think, yeah.
So
that's just what it is.
If I tell you not to do something, you're going to do it or want to do it.
Hell yeah. Don't you dare cheat on me with Rihanna. Like, come on, what you want me to do?
Okay. How much Henny was involved? How much Henny?
Listen, I'm not even going to answer it because, you know.
So then the last thing is, you know, I think we're all hypocrites to an extent because we all have social media accounts that we participate in this lever pulling, the slot machine. And there are people in this industry that say, I'm not going to be on social media. Jackie McMullen, Kevin Arnovitz, they don't have active Twitter accounts. And what I think about is like, you know, what causes them to be able to detach and not partake in the Twitter world? And part of it is, you know, strength is like, you know, just the internal fortitude to say, I don't want to participate in that. The other thing is security. It's like a lot of people need Twitter or need YouTube to get ahead in life, to like get their name out there, to promote work. And I knew if Twitter wasn't around in 2010 or 2009, when I was trying to get a foothold in this space, I don't know if I'd make it. And so, you know, part of the reason why you're not online, or part of the reason why you're not tweeting online for, in certain cases, is just because they don't need it to get ahead, right? They're secure. Their jobs are secure. Their personal lives are secure. And I think a lot of times I think about my activity on Twitter as like, am I just doing too much on here? Right. Do I need to step away? And I find a lot of the times, the more I use it, it's because I'm more insecure about something in my life, whether it's like my, I'm just in a place where I feel like I need to reach other people because something else is not fulfilling me. Yeah. And so I have to just keep that in mind and like understand that, you know, there are good things and bad things about social media. And for our kids, like you talked about, Ben, is just, there's an upside to the power of like, we had a encyclopedia on our shelf in our house as kids, and I could open up a page and like learn so much, but I had to go and find that. And if that word wasn't in the encyclopedia, I was fucked. Wouldn't be able to learn anything about it. But now we have that times a billion, like we have all that information at our fingertips. And so there is that upside, but you just got to figure out, like, sometimes sometimes you kind of consciously think about, yo, do I need to be in here right now?
Yeah.
I'm telling you,
that's what helped me stay off social media for, you know, for what I did, you know, and that might not seem like a long time to do anything, a month and a half, whatever, but it's like, if you're used to doing these things, I tell you what, for anybody listening, for any of y'all on the call, like if you deleted all your social media apps right now and went to sleep, when you woke up, your muscle memory would have you put your thumb on your screen where they were, like, because that's what started happening to me. And I was just like, man, like, this shit is like, I'm becoming too reliant. Even if I don't tweet anything, even if I don't post anything on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, nothing, like, I would check it for something. And I wouldn't know what I'm looking for until I saw it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I read something, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I needed something to validate me opening this up today. So it got to a point where I was just like, you know what? Let me just see if I can not do this for a little while, for just a month. You know, it lasted a little bit longer, and it was just like, yeah, I can, because it's like, it's not that. When you in it, you think it's important because you're in it. You have to think it's important. If not, you're going to feel like you're wasting your time. As soon as you step away from it, I'm not going to say it becomes less important, but you start to, I guess, like, see the value in other things. You know what I'm saying? Like no matter what it is, it might be people that's putting off doing something. They might be putting off writing something or recording something or whatever. And they get on social media every single day and they tell themselves, I'll do it tomorrow. And then tomorrow becomes like next week or next month. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's not.
That's behavior changing, man.
Yeah.
That's how your behavior gets changed.
Yeah. And I don't want them to feel like attacked or something like that. It's just that, just try that. Just try to break up the habit of doing these things so much and just see if you become a little bit more productive. Just see.
Well, what I will say, and I'll leave you guys on this because Duke is coming in to get me, is part of the reason Jackie Mack and other people cannot be on social media is that the older you get, the harder it is to change behavior and the harder it is to adopt new behavior, right? So if you think about it, what age they encountered social media and where it fit into the relative importance of their behavioral patterns, it was probably very low. When you think about it for you, Tom, the way you described it, it was essential. And that all connects together. So things like what Mari is doing about breaking behavioral patterns is actually really, really important. And 30-day breaks, 60-day breaks. It's also one of the reasons why COVID is going to have such a profound impact on our behaviors, what we watch, all this stuff. We have seen that people over 50, for the first time ever, are more likely to watch something streamed on demand or time shifted than watch it live for the first time ever. These are behaviors that just wouldn't change, but COVID forced it. And I say all that to say this, think about what your kid's behavioral patterns are and if you are happy with the pattern. And if you're not happy with the pattern, that's when you should start exploring breaking them the same way you would do yourself. Because as Mari pointed out, we can all think our kid's happy-go-lucky, all this stuff, but we see this over and over again in news reports. And it's just important that we stay plugged in. We talk to our kids. That's one of the things that I love about Mari is just hearing how often he's doing things with his kids. And Tom, you know, picking his kids up from school, but talking to them, like being there. And I think that's an important subject for another week. But I highly encourage everybody to watch this documentary, especially Tom, even though you're probably half an expert on this already, and Mari, because, well, you're far along in the parenting endeavor and probably could teach them a few things about it. But I think it's an important series, and I really appreciate talking with you guys about it.
Always, always, man. Definitely. Like, because you need to have that type of circle just to let you know what I mean? Like, what you're doing is I don't even want to say let you know what you're doing is the right thing, but to just encourage you, you know what I mean? Because they understand where you are in life and they might even can learn something from you. And I appreciate that no matter what stage we are in life, career wise, parenting wise, whatever, like we all learn something from each other and we always encourage each other, you know, and push each other to do better no matter what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, and also Giants, man, they're just terrible. It's
God damn it, Tom.
I know. I'm sorry.
That was a dick move. Right. Maybe there is a rivalry between the dads.
Damn it.
No, wait, hold on.
I'm a Giants
fan.
Did the Eagles win today? Did the Eagles win today?
Listen, I told you on text. the Eagles won a Super Bowl 2 years ago.
You're right.
Good till 2030. We don't need to do a thing. We lose every game. I'm not upset. We're all good.
All right, cool. You know what? And that's fair, man. That's fair because – you know, I'm going to bring up rings, too. The Panthers lost, too. So, you know, that's okay.
Yeah, you want to tell my dog?
It's okay.
You want to crush your soul right now?
I'm out. Love you all.
Love you all, man. Love you all, man.
Later, dads.